You know, as we record this interview, it's noon on Friday. And Carl Sporer was good enough to be able to slide us into his agenda. I know he's got to be someplace in like 22 minutes. So I'm going to take 15 of it, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate your time. And you slid me into your schedule as well, and I greatly appreciate that.
Well, it's a privilege. Where you, I know this. Nobody's going to know what happens at 1:30, but where are you on your way?
I'm over to Carbondale to do an interview with the TV station.
Oh, WSIU?
And then the newspaper, yep.
Okay, so you got a busy day.
Yeah, and then I'm up to Sandoval at Fats to do a big thing for at night, all-you-can-eat fish fry. So if you're in the area, come on by.
Right. Well,
it's
course,
free.
The fish will be 3 days old by now, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because...
Yeah, it's Monday while they're listening to us.
Yes, I forgot that.
Yeah, it's all right. Now, as we move forward, let's think about this. And I don't know if you had the opportunity to hear it, but... It struck me in the last interview, and you said, I want the listeners to ask themselves this question or something like this. What has John Shimkus done for you in your district? Did you get a chance to hear his response?
I did. There was a little stuttering going on when you asked.
Yeah. So what was your takeaway? Because John, I'm going to paraphrase.
Sure.
You. John said, I hope they would think of me when they see their paycheck, which of course they're talking about the tax reform.
Yes. So let's talk about the tax reform. So first of all, if you are one of those lucky people that are getting an extra $15 or $20 a week, God bless you, and I'm thrilled for you. But there's some other things that I'd like you to know about that tax reform bill. First of all, $4 out of $5 went to corporations and to the super rich. So for every $1 you're getting, people who don't need the money are getting $4. So your $20 in my view should be $100. I think of a tax plan to help Southern Illinois and help working people and single mothers and people that are really in stress would look more like getting $100 a week or $500 a month for anybody making less than $50,000. Well, the question becomes, how do we pay for that? Well, we pay for that by having a progressive tax that taxes people who are doing well, and God bless them as well. I don't have any problem with people that are doing well. But if they're doing well and able to have a lot of luxuries in life when other people in life can't feed their families, let's have a progressive tax. The other thing that I'd like to see is taxing corporations properly. I think that we should have probably lowered the tax rate to about 28% and then closed all of the loopholes. We have so many loopholes. 2 years ago, they did a study, and 60% of the corporations that made more than $10 million that year paid zero in taxes. So you want to talk about socialism. Corporations are the ones getting the socialism, because I know the first response from some people is going to be, if we give people $500 a month, isn't that redistribution of wealth? Isn't that socialism? And I would say for 38 years, we've been having reverse socialism, where money is coming out of the working class and going to the rich class.
But the purist, Carl, might say, you're not giving me anything.
Right.
That's my money to begin with.
As far as the working class
people? The
taxes,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're saying, well, you ain't giving me anything, you're letting me keep.
Well, sure, and I think the working class people should keep their money, and I think if you're making less than $50,000 a year, in many cases, you wouldn't be paying that $6,000. $500 times 12 months would be $6,000. You might only be paying $3,000 or $4,000 in taxes. So in some instances, and for really people that are really struggling, we're actually talking about a negative income tax.
You know, what's interesting about this is that when you look at Southern Illinois and taxes, because we're talking about federal here.
Yes, sir.
And it almost comes to the point now that no matter what the federal government does, you still have to look to Springfield, because they're going to take their end too. And if the federal government were to give you some tax relief, Springfield will go, how much was that? And we'll take it. And I think that's a legitimate concern now after you've seen Springfield and its actions and lack of conscious financial management. So what do we do when USA Today, in your district, 15th congressional district that you're running for in the Democratic Party, you'll see Carl Sporer on the March 20th ballot, that you have the county that is the worst county in the state of Illinois, Saline. Highest rate of poverty. People are leaving the county. Really, you know, they talk about the average income in the state of Illinois being 50. Not Saline County, it's not.
It's not.
It's 30. or 28, 39. I've heard a lot of different numbers, but I know it's gone down about between 6,000 and 9,000 according to census reports. What do you do about the worst county in the state of Illinois that can be done from a congressional standpoint?
Well, so, you know, it's interesting because I remember after our last interview, we talked about what has John done, and then you recanted when Jerry Costello...
Recounted.
Yes.
I didn't recant. I recounted.
Recounted.
Okay.
Thank you for the English lesson.
I just wanted to make sure that I didn't have to recant.
There you go. Right. You know, my bad. But you recounted that when Jerry Costello was the representative for downstate Illinois, that every week, week after week after week, you were getting a press release about federal money that Jerry had brought back to the district.
Yeah.
And you also recounted that John Shimkus has never sent you a single press release of that nature, and he's been in office 21 years. So one thing you do is you go after the federal money that's available to help these counties. That's one thing. The other thing you do is you try to get economic activity going through small business loans that are guaranteed. So people that may be on the bubble because you already have people that are stressed out. So maybe getting that small business loan is difficult. Let's have some guaranteed small business loans and then some programs to support those small businesses. So a first-time small business owner has direction and can get some advice on how to be successful. And let's get some small businesses going in a lot of these buildings that are sitting vacant.
Right.
And again, I'm a big proponent of renewable energy, not only for the independence
well,
that it brings
I'm
people.
Glad you brought that with this renewable energy because, you know, when you take a look at Saline County, how it got there, it's coal.
Yes. Look, I have nothing against coal. Illinois generates 40% of its electricity with coal. Coal is going to be with us for some time. And there's not, and that's the status quo, and that's the way it is. Over time, things change, and we are going to transition as a society to a more renewable energy. But coal is not going away, and God bless our coal mining families and the people who go down in those mines. Nothing against those folks. But not all of those jobs will ever come back no matter what we do. We have a natural gas price which has decreased so much that it is less expensive to produce the energy with natural gas, and we have these great big huge machines where one machine does the work of 100 people, and mechanization has taken a lot of those jobs.
Right.
So those jobs that just will never come back because of those conditions, let's give those families hope and let's give them some jobs. And for the people that are in the mines, God bless you, keep working and keep our state running on electricity.
So, you know, I wonder sometimes if the issue we can talk about renewable energy or we can talk about tax reform, but maybe the issue now is the way we go about doing business in Washington, D.C. I can't help but think that there's a lack of efficiency, of civility, that many people in Washington, D.C. do in fact think it's about them. I mean, you get what I'm saying? And then when that spills out from the TV, from Facebook, from radio, it spills out. People go, oh, man. And they kind of, you know, they put their hands up around their eyes and then they go, oh, good. What's next? You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Absolutely. And you've put a lot out there to unpackage. 90% of the people in this country know and rightfully believe that Congress has sold out, that they are owned by special interest. And when you say politician, it can tend to be or thought of as a dirty word. For that exact reason, because people are in it for himself. The dirty little secret is people go to Washington that aren't rich and then end up being rich because they're in it for themselves. At my age and with my background, I would like to think of the job I'm pursuing as more of a public servant, that there is work to be done
as
here.
As a statesman.
As a statesman. And, you know, I was corrected up in Bond County early on when I made a crack about being a politician and that I wasn't one. And Mary Jo in Bond County stood up. She must have been 75, 80 years old. And she said, young man, I want to tell you something, that being a good politician is an honorable profession. Go to Washington and be a public servant and be a good politician. And those words have rung through my ears for a year now, and they never leave me.
You know, because that I think this is the key towards getting things done to a certain extent. You know, it's funny because a friend of mine was in Washington, D.C. this past week, and they sent a letter, a photograph of they were in the bookstore at like the White House or somewhere, memorials, and there's a book, bound book of George Washington's How to Be Courteous.
Right.
And you realize that there's a lack of that right now. So When it comes to the pressing issues of you, Carl Spohr, running as Democrat in the 15th Congressional District against an incumbent who's been there for quite some time, what do you have to do to differentiate yourself between you, your Democratic opponent, and you, and John Shimkus? Because this time period is crucial when you come out of March 20th and fall towards November. You kind of got to run dual parallel races to a certain extent.
Yes. So I have to beat my primary opponent. Look, my primary opponent being in my party, he's been attacking me a little bit, but I have taken the I have taken the stance. I am not going to attack someone in my own party. We have bigger fish to fry at the end of it. As far as being a Democrat, let me say this: I'm a centrist, and I say that reluctantly because people may think that I'm weak. I'm very strong. It takes someone strong to be in the middle and to want to reach out to both sides and take flack from both sides. And I think that one of the major problems in our country is that we have gotten so extreme. The opinions and the people representing us are so far out on the left and the right that they can't talk to each other, and they are rude to each other. And the things you hear them say on TV is just appalling.
All right, the things that were yelled at the NRA representative, all right? Yeah. Burn her.
Yeah.
Signs up that say murder the National Rifle Association.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Now, because I'm telling you, the NRA, and I'm more than a little bit familiar with it, got my first safety course when I was a young man, you know, and had that NRA safety patch on my first hunting vest. You know, we've kind of gone off the tracks. The NRA didn't go into Florida and kill someone. They're on a safety organization, and they are the protectors, of self-appointed protectors of the Second Amendment, an enumerated right in the amendments.
Well, sure, and look, again, a lot to unpack here. You know, I think everybody always looks for a scapegoat, whether it be immigrants or the NRA. Anytime there's a problem, we look not to address it fully. From my standpoint, you know, if you look at the NRA 15, 20 years ago, they really were big proponents of strong background checks. And now they're dead against it. And I think where the NRA is getting a little bit of flack is that every issue that we want to talk about is you're going to take my guns. You don't like the Second Amendment. And that is just, that's not true. Let me also comment on anybody that makes threats to anybody, be it right threatening left or left threatening right or people threatening the NRA. That's just not acceptable. I had someone threaten me last night on Facebook. I said, stop it or I'll block it.
Right.
You know, we're just not going to go down that road.
And here's the thing, Carl. While I was listening to you talk, especially when you're talking about we go out and get mad at it and we start yelling at people. And you know why I think that is? Because it's easy.
Sure. It absolutely is.
It's easier than thinking for yourself. It's easier than going out and getting informed and finding out the truth. It's easier to say it's your fault, not mine, and now you go fix it. I'm going to go about my day. You know, it's easy.
Absolutely, it's easy. It's easy to watch Fox News or MSNBC and develop all your opinions based on two companies that are in business to sell advertising time and to generate profit for their shareholders. And they are going to take things to the extremes. And what you've got to, and it's easy then to, okay, I'm going to research on the internet, but I'm going to research through my Facebook buddies who all think exactly the alike. We've got to get outside of our bubbles and actually do some work, because by not doing the work and allowing ourselves to be segregated, we're at war with each other, and we really shouldn't be, and we're hurting ourselves.
Self-destructive.
Yes,
sir. And self-fulfilling prophecies of self-destruction, because you're the one kicking more coal in the fire, for lack of a better word. We'll pick coal today.
One thing I wanted to just real comment. I'm sorry, Tom.
Sure, go ahead.
One thing I wanted to comment on that is we talked about immigration the last time, and I made the comment that, you know, both sides are right. And in so many of these debates that we can't even talk to each other, both sides have good points and both sides are right. And one thing that's really made America a wonderful, great place in the past is having a middle ground where both sides and those good things come out and we take the best of the best. And we've stopped doing that. We need to get back to where we're not throwing stones at each other. We're saying, hey, you know what? They are right about this. Oh, those guys are, you know what? They have a point. Let's find a way to talk like adults and to use those great ideas on both sides.
Would one of the good examples be talking about chain migration?
Sure, absolutely.
Because the it's immigration good, but chain migration is in many people's opinions, and specifically in relationship to MS-13 with the new numbers that were released this week.
Sure.
Seem to indicate that with the help of chain migration, 22 states now have a violent problem, murder problem with MS-13. Well, because of chain migration.
Well, absolutely. You know, so you have people on the left that say, you know, chain migration is a good thing because it reunites family. That's true. You have people on the right, and the point you just made, that it is opening the door to violent gangs coming in. And they're a very, you know, MS-13 is a very organized, almost military-style gang. They are very serious, and you do not want to mess with those folks.
Right.
And law enforcement, you know, has their issues messing with those folks. So both sides are right. You know, have good points. So now how do we come to the middle? How do we eliminate the bad part of it, which is we're getting gang members and other not undesirable people in, but yet we don't keep a father and a sister separated? How do we do that? That takes thought. That's hard work.
I don't know. I think it takes common sense.
Yeah.
But it does take time.
Yes, sir.
Because, you know, you got right down the road, Atlanta. They just were found guilty illegally in the country, $500,000 in crystal meth in Atlanta.
Yes.
And found guilty of convicted two men. We're running out of time, as you and I very often do. So let's take the last couple of minutes that we have available. And hypothetically, I hope that this is not the case, that you and I will speak again before March 20th. I have every reason to believe that will be the case. But
we will.
If somebody's listening right now today, and they want to know the difference between you and your Democratic opponent, because you've got to get through that March 20th needle, you know, the eye of the needle here to get through that. What is the difference between you and your Democratic opponent in the primary for March 20th?
Well, I have a level of maturity that is significantly greater than his level of maturity. And my background in education and economics leads me to be able, much more suited to address the economic woes of not only Southern Illinois, but the entire district. I understand how business works. I understand what it takes to get things going and the flow of money going in this community. And I have several ideas and pathways to start that process. It's not going to be an easy process. You're not going to get an office and snap your fingers, but a little bit of work over some time and things will get better and better in Southern Illinois.
So let's take a look. You win. Let's say you win and you go all the way and you're the 15th congressional district person, right? You can work with Trump?
He's our president. He's our president. And as long as he's our president, it's my job to work with Trump. We're adults come across.
Oh my God, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that.
Well, that's
not in the last year. It's my job to work with Trump. I don't think, but you get what I'm saying.
But as an equal, you know, Congress is an equal branch of government. And so, you know, where there are things that we have agreement on, it's my job to reach out for the best interest of the district, where things that I feel are in the best interest of the district, and bring those things back. And if that means working with the president, who ultimately signs the bills that I want signed to help my district, I better not be at war with him.
You know, and there's a reason why I asked. The State of the Union address, where Nancy Pelosi turns around and tells people they're standing up and clapping for something to sit down. See, that kind of aggravated me, because if they had a reason to show some type of exuberance, that's how the ice gets broken, isn't it? You go, hey, well, maybe you don't kick puppies in your spare time after all. And that's how that starts. I mean, for a lot of people, it goes incrementally. And if you got one person saying, no, you won't, and that person's the leader, they ruin everything with what we're trying to do.
A quick comment on that. I am a heartland Democrat. I am a heartland American. We are not coastal Democrats or Republicans or Americans here in Illinois, in Southern Illinois. We are heartland people. We have our own set of values. We have our own needs. And if elected, I plan on representing us, not the agendas from the coasts.